You're listening to Campfire Conversations, brought to you by Three Rivers Land Trust. Connected to the land, committed to conservation.
All right, folks, we're back for another episode of Campfire Conversations. We are here on a chilly day in the Backcountry and Beyond studio. We have two of my favorite people here in the podcast studio.
She's lying a little bit, ain't
she, I'll take it.
Two of my favorite people. Matt has joined us today.
What's going on, everybody?
And Michael.
Hello.
Michael, the new SAP coordinator. So that's one of the things we're going to talk about. We had our first ever rendezvous this past weekend on the 13th. Is that right?
Yep, the 13th, the SAP rendezvous. First, just want to thank everybody that was able to come out. I think we had right around 25-ish people that came out. We had some pizza, some beer, some soda, had a little raffle that went on, and big old bonfire, thanks to Katie putting that together. It was toasty and warm, and from all the feedback I've been getting, I've been chatting to some of the members that came out. Everybody loved it. Had a pretty good discussion about kind of things people want to see with the program and things that they liked, which I'm sure we'll kind of open up and talk about some of the stuff that we were chatting during that rendezvous. But yeah, it was a great event. Fun times.
So I just want to take a step back a second.
Good, because I wanted to, too.
So Mike is the SAP coordinator. So Mike, how long have you been the SAP coordinator now?
3 months.
3 months. Mm-hmm. So how have you liked being the SAP coordinator? Like, what are some of the pros, cons of being an SAP coordinator?
Yeah, I tell people, not at work, obviously, but my family and friends, the SAP is probably my favorite part, because I get to chat with hunters.
So SAP is what we call it around the office.
Sportsman Access Program. Yeah, I guess.
Actually,
that
just started with Michael, in case you didn't know that.
Oh, really?
I kind of like it, though.
Nobody before you has ever called it. I shouldn't say ever, because maybe some people do that I do not realize. But programmatically, we have never called it the SAP program.
Well, it's a SAP now.
We're just not that lazy to where we can't just say SAP. And Mike's just like, nah, it's just SAP.
You don't have time.
Yeah, no, just get to the point.
But how do you like being an SAP coordinator? Like, I feel like the interactions with all the guys that are in it would be really, really awesome.
Yeah, everybody likes hunting camp where you just get to talk hunting all the time. So it's a nice break of my day doing normal stuff to just be able to call up hunters. They call me, ask questions, try to get some insight on what's going on at the property. So, yeah, it's...
Because SAP is just a part of your job. Now, what's the other, like, what else takes up most of your time?
Yeah, so I am also development associate with the... focus on membership, so I'm also working with all the members, making a lot of phone calls to people, try to keep them members and
let
donations.
Them know that we love them, right?
Yeah.
So you're the guy somebody just wants to make a general donation outside of SAP to reach out to.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, cool. And anything with events, registering for that.
Which helps keep our lights on.
Yeah, yeah.
If anybody wants to,
you're saying I'm important.
Send out some donations, please let Michael know.
Yeah, but Michael anyway. @trlt.org. Send me an email.
And something different about Michael, I guess, SAP coordinator wise. See, I still hadn't adopted the SAP yet.
Oh, I see. So you do SAP instead of SAP.
Yep.
Okay, gotcha.
You were actually an SAP member for quite some time before you were coordinator, right?
Yep. So I actually heard about Three Rivers Land Trust just volunteering and then learned about the SAP.
You can call it what you want, buddy. What you want.
Program. But yeah, I've done some turkey hunting on the properties before getting here. Actually, unfortunately, missed a turkey.
So what you're saying is you're not a good turkey hunter? Or just not a good shot?
But my brother's listening. He'll agree with you on that.
I was going to say, you had a close encounter, because I remember at an archery tournament you were telling us a story.
Yeah, and I've learned just don't tell people that you missed. It works better. But yeah, I was at the point turkey hunting, and I mean, I was swarmed in turkeys and finally got one that came, I won't say how close, but
no, go ahead. Well, how close?
No, hey, that might be a saving grace for you for turkey hunting, because the closer they are, the better your shot has to be, because that tight pattern is still really super
tight.
Well,
that's what I've learned. I've got way too tight of a pattern.
That's why I just shoot them when they're way out there.
You don't give them a chance, do you?
No, you can't use rifles, right?
Not in this state, but if they 50 yards, they fair game.
Yeah, I think that was my problem. It came too close.
So do you want to talk about a little bit of the reasoning behind the rendezvous? I know even back before you started, Matt and I have always had this idea, and I'm sure other folks in the past have had an idea too, because it's always been kind of a little bit of a discussion at the Land Trust of doing something to get these members involved, because we love every one of our members, and a lot of our membership is kind of broke off into interest groups, right? Like we have hikers, we have paddlers, we have SAP, and all of these people value conservation for one reason or the other, but what brings them together is often much different. So do you want to talk about a little bit why we wanted to do the thing in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of mentioned, you know, the hunting camp feel, you know, deer season, everybody hangs out and chats, and we didn't really have that with the SAP, so we wanted to get everybody together and not only get feedback about what they like or what they'd like to see, but just hang out and share stories and kind of build a community of SAP members. And I think we definitely achieved it. It was our first one. I doubt it's going to be the last, and it was a good time.
I feel like a big thing of it too is, you know, just kind of like building the camaraderie in the group and all, just having somebody to talk to about, you know, I know growing up we were in hunt leases and all, and everybody gets together and be like, hey man, what'd you see this year? What'd you see today? Kind of deal. And, you know, where are you hunting? You know, you want to get together? Or if you kill something, hey man, I need some help getting something out, or hey, you want to go hunting together sometime, kind of thing. And I feel like that was a big conversation topic at the rendezvous, was how we can get more people together. And I think that's something we would like to try to do more so in the future, given opportunities for people to get together more.
Well, you know, you and I have recently started hunting together a lot too, squirrel hunting, but it's always more fun often when you are with somebody else, right? Like,
yeah.
So you're not a lone ranger out there, yeah. Not because you need somebody there, but because if you're out in the woods and you're deer hunting and you see something that you didn't get a shot at, but it's going towards your buddy, you know.
Hey, shoot me that text.
Yeah, might send him a little text so he can get off the TikTok or whatever.
Ain't that the truth?
But, you know, I think that's important, and I think that's something that we could definitely build within our program, because, you know, hunting is the thing that brings these folks together, and it's worth, I guess you can never have enough good friends, and it seems like everybody in the SAP program are good folks that you'd want to be around, so we might as well, you know, foster those relationships and build some community there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the people, it was cool to see, I mean, there was some groups that came with people, but at the rendezvous, there were some people by themselves, and it was just kind of cool to see everybody interact and gain insight. I mean, we have a lot of ground for our SAP properties, and some people that hunt the point only don't know about Low Water Bridge, and they were kind of getting some insight on how good the hunting is there and might be interested in switching things up a little bit. So I think it was just a great way to just meet other people and kind of gain that friendship. And as SAP members know, you know, you gain a little advantage with the group party,
mm-hmm.
Putting in with another friend. So I think I saw several people kind of thinking and discussing, hey, let's put in together and increase our chances, which was cool to see. It was the first one, and it was a little community of hunters, and it was fun.
We had a meal. We anticipated having it catered from
yes,
the get-go.
Yes, we did. Yep.
We're going to have some really good home cooking. What was on the menu originally?
It was barbecue chicken with all the fixings.
With all the fixings. Look at him adapting well.
I'll hang around Matt a little bit more. I'll be talking real Southern.
Yeah.
But that was changed because we didn't have as many people show up as expected or anticipated.
Yeah.
But I think there's room, and I know Matt and I had talked about this a lot ahead of time. It's like, man, this is a community. We need to have a community meal, whether that's a crawfish bowl or
low country bowl is
whatever
the word you're looking for,
whatever. A chicken stew, chili, something like that. It was cold, but we didn't have that this time, but I think there's room for improvement going forward, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about interest and how many people want to come out, so the more people we get, bigger and better we can do this thing. So if you're listening and you're a SAP member or you're interested in the SAP, sign up and come out to our next gathering.
What do you think the temperature was this weekend?
Cold.
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. The wind died down. I mean, it was probably 30 degrees when we were out there by the fire.
But nobody was cold, were they?
Nope. Katie did a good job with that fire.
So it was hot around that fire.
You ain't kidding.
My daggum buttons on my pants was getting like Brandon irons.
Yeah, we originally, I think we were told or asked to bring a very small fire pit that was, you know, four people could hold.
Which come in clutch.
Yeah, I agree with that. That four people could stand around and hold hands and, you know, it was that
sing
small.
Kumbaya.
Right.
I think we did that.
We were talking, it's like, it's going to be cold. We need something else. So we brought in a bunch of slabs, a bunch of wood, and had a bonfire. What, maybe?
See, when you say slabs, that can mean multiple things now.
What could it mean?
Slabs can also mean some big old crappie you're bringing in, which is coming up here pretty soon. We'll get into that later, but.
And he means crappie when he says that.
Oh, Wisconsinite over here. But one thing I thought that was really, really cool seeing everybody come in was it wasn't just all deer hunters.
Like, that's
there was
true.
A lot of. It was cool seeing that there's more people that don't even deer hunt that use the properties we have for other things like waterfowl hunting, which I know I talked to several guys that that's the only kind of hunting they do out there. Some guys, all they hunt's birds, whether it be turkeys or ducks or geese, whatever it may be. But then there's the guys that they just deer hunt, which I thought was really cool.
And I think that's something different about our properties too. So, you know, in the past 2 to 3 years, I've tried to enter into the waterfowl world. And it's not easy finding a place to waterfowl hunt, but several of our properties, just a byproduct of what we do, we try to have focus, you know, we try to focus our conservation in areas that might be situated along a river or a watershed or whatever it may be for various reasons. So a lot of our properties are along these water sources, so a byproduct of that being there being some really good waterfowl opportunity. And if somebody's interested in waterfowl, I think the SAP program is a good way to get there, just because oftentimes public land water holes can get quickly overrun. But
yeah, and I mean, I've haven't dabbled into waterfowl hunting yet, but I know before knowing about SAP, that was always kind of a hang up. Everybody said, "Oh, go to public land. Good luck. Get there at like 2 a.m. Otherwise, you're not going to find a spot." And
I mean, that's accurate, though.
Yeah.
I mean, like, truly accurate. That's not like
because the guys that do it are diehards about it, and they're there, and they're going to get their spot. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
yeah.
Just and with the SAP, how bad do you want it?
Yeah, and with the SAP, you get your block all to yourself. You ain't got to worry about that, which is awesome.
Yeah. But what was the new change? There's a new change in rules about that, about waterfowl hunting, isn't it?
We've discussed it. I don't know if anything has come out or is going to come out, but we've discussed a few changes to alleviate pressure on certain blocks, because what we want to do is make sure that folks, anybody applying, has equal opportunity. And what we don't want is for one person to go in there in the early season and hammer away every single day.
Have a bang fest.
And then the next guy is sitting there with his hands in his pockets and not seeing anything. So we've discussed, I don't know what the outcome will be of it, but we've discussed mechanisms to alleviate some of that pressure by having off days or rest days on.
That'll be cool.
Yeah. And it's not going to be, you're still going to have plenty of opportunity. It's not going to be a huge change, but it'll help you out, because if you're not in that first week and your second week, third week, you're going to have a good idea that the birds are going to be there, because like Katie said, we didn't just blast them all the first week.
Yeah. And I guess that was an intent of the rendezvous as well, is to talk to folks that may have been longtime hunters to see what they like about the program, what they want to see continue. And, you know, at the end of the day, we don't do this program for us. We would be more, I guess we would come out financially better if we just leased it to a private landowner or a hunting club, whatever. But we don't do that because we want everybody to have equal opportunity and a low cost entry point to be able to hunt somewhere safe. I forgot where I was even going with that, but
sounded good.
It sounded really good. Yeah.
Like spot on what the SAP program is.
I feel like,
yeah. And I mean, I guess the simplest way to, if you're listening and you haven't heard about the Sportsman Access Program or SAP, is that you're getting a chance for an entire week to have close to 200 acres of, your own hunting that nobody else can be on. So instead of having to go to public land and worry about somebody being in your spot or not being able to, you know, feel safe, because sometimes public land, things can happen. This is your own block for an entire week. And it is a lottery draw system, but we'll go through some some statistics on that in a little bit here, but you have a pretty good chance. And even if you don't get drawn, we do leftover blocks where you can pay and you guarantee that you're going to get that block. So the hunting opportunity is there.
I know where I was going with that now. So
so you weren't listening to a thing I was saying. You were just trying to remember what you were going to say.
Don't talk too much. You're going to make me forget it again. So where I was going with that was part of the rendezvous was to listen to SAP members, because we don't do this for ourselves, because it's not, you know, we could make more leasing it out to a hunting club, whatever, but we want folks to have that opportunity. So it is important to us what these SAP members think. So we're always open to potential changes that we can make. You know, we can't facilitate everybody and make it the way everybody wants to. So that was, I guess, a theme of the night is, you know, listening with an earnest ear to what folks had to say and see if there are things that wasn't working well or that we could do better. And, you know, I think 90% of folks loved what we're doing and didn't really want any changes. I think from talking to folks and, you know, going around the fire, really the only thing that come up that could be changed would be potentially more scouting days.
Yeah, that was definitely something. And I understand it, too, because if you get drawn, you got a week, and that's the only week, and you've never seen the property. Can be a little overwhelming, especially if you're only able to hunt on the weekends. So we're going to look into that on just kind of things that we can do where we can get people out there and just see the properties more and scout. I mean, there were some people that were just more interested in being able to just see the property and not necessarily like pre-scout for deer season or pre-scout for turkey, but just be able to walk the land and know what it looks like
and see and understand some of those features, because oftentimes you don't, you know, you can see what something looks like on a map, but ground truthing it, these properties can look very different. So I think it's important, and if you are a hunter and you're trying to find the best way to navigate to a place that you want to hunt, that's very important. And there's just so many more things that go into it that you're not able to necessarily see just by looking at a topography map or on X or any of the
above. Get there at 5 a.m. and it's dark and you got to find your way.
Right.
So let's set the scene a little bit for what happened on Saturday.
I'm trying to think of what you're talking about.
No, we going to. So what happened? So we showed up about what, 2:30?
Yep.
Roughly?
Yeah. Well, some of us showed up earlier than others, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I love it that everybody's picking on me. You know, some people have stuff to do on their weekends.
I don't
weekends,
even know if it was 2:30 that he got there. It was even close to 3.
But anyway, so Katie and Michael got there early and had everything pretty much all set up. You know, we had our Three Rivers Land Trust tents up. They had all coolers nice set out and labeled. Had some nice merch tables set out under the barn. And then
cornhole. Don't forget the cornhole.
Wait a minute. Okay. I ain't got there yet.
All right.
I got a little more storytelling to do on that.
You
got to
make sure you mention the cornhole.
Yeah. Can't have a bonfire without cornhole. But anyway, Katie, she'd had all her slabs from her and Brock's sawmill loaded up on a trailer and piled up nice and neat to be incinerated.
Yep.
And then we had a nice little fire pit before it got dark and cold,
which was also a little bit of a challenge within itself, but I tried to pre-plan it because I know we were expecting like 4 inches of rain that week, and we already had all the slabs there for the bonfire, and I was like, man, this is going to be a difficult process. So I went out there ahead of time. I was already doing some work at Low Water Bridge and put some tarps over the bonfire pits or over the bonfire.
They did not stay.
Yes, they did.
I thought you said they flew off.
No, they didn't. Oh. They were there.
If you got there at 2, you would have seen it.
Yeah.
Well. But anyway, then there was the cornhole setup. And we spent probably, 15 minutes trying to get all the glare off the boards and everything. Yeah. And then me and Michael had a roundabout, and I got my tail kicked.
Was it a kicking? I mean, because I wasn't really paying attention.
One game was a kicking. The other one was just a beating.
Yeah. He tried.
But
A for effort.
So had a good game.
So Michael is the premier.
Yeah, what are you now that you're the TRLT
Cornhole
champion? What was your other title?
The SBJ Cornhole champion. Yeah. Yeah.
Sportsman's Journal.
Sportsman's Journal champ. Yep. Yeah. I just collect trophies. Yeah. Thank you.
Collect trophies, collect checks, you know.
Yep.
But so that was the scene for everybody that rolled up.
We had some nice string lights under the
We had some nice ambiance.
Courtesy of my wife.
In.
They're still there.
Which she's not going to be happy with next time.
I told her, she's like, we got nowhere to put them anyway. So they may have just been donated.
Look at you being an upfront, honest husband. I love it.
But
I learned that lesson quick.
So So we got together, pizza. We had Papa John's pizza. Showed up about what, 4:30?
Yep.
Got there. We had a little raffle going on for some prizes. I think we gave away what, like a Yeti tumbler.
Yeti tumbler, a shirt, a hat, a Scrapper Buck decoy,
and two then, SAP gift certificates. Wasn't
yep,
it?
Yeah.
What was that, two four SP, draws each?
Four draws each. Yep.
So that was pretty
and
cool.
And one of the people that won the four draws, it was actually cool because he's a new member that hadn't bought any draws yet. So now he's got four.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Which I should touch on that too. There was maybe five or six people that weren't current SAP members that kind of learned about it from their friends and they came along and they – I know two of them, a father and son, they left and they said they're very excited about it. So
that's awesome. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
Yep.
But that kind of set the stage. Everybody got something to eat. Everybody got some lottery tickets for the little raffle we did. And then after everybody got their bellies full and something to drink, we had sat down and had a serious discussion.
I wouldn't say it was serious, but
okay. We talked about some serious stuff.
All right.
That we're about to dive into now.
Oh. Oh, I see what this is. You're talking about statistics.
Statistics. Katie, since you're the most educated person here, please define what statistics is for us.
Percentages and numbers and things that make my head hurt. Michael and I had that conversation before we went over here because we were truly trying to do an in-depth analysis of every person that put in draws and, you know, trying to figure it all out. And
yeah, just to kind of give people an idea of their percentage of chance.
The summary is it gets really complicated really quick.
Yeah, a lot of numbers.
So we're going to stick to the simple stuff today, right?
Yeah, I like that.
So, Matt, I have a question for you. That's why I took this paper out,
no
from,
cheating.
Out from in front of you. So we have 5 SAP properties.
Which are The Point,
yes.
Low Water Bridge,
uh-huh.
Harrington, Petty 1 and 2. Well, those are the separate blocks. I'm sorry. Excuse me. I know this stuff is monitoring properties, not as hunt blocks. Petty, and then there's one more. What is it?
Want a hint?
We burned it.
Saunders.
No.
Chesson.
Yeah. Smith Branch.
Smith Branch. So, I called it Chesson Longleaf Forest. But
so that was not the test, but you jumped.
You already failed. So
you jumped
I'm kind of worried about
we
the
know
real
the
test.
Properties now that are
okay.
Our options.
All right.
Go ahead with your next question.
My actual question that you were a little premature on is, of those 5 SAP properties, rank them from the most sought after properties, as in there were 868 total lottery tickets that were placed this previous draw period, the winter draw period. From those, which properties rank them, which had the most lottery tickets used on them?
Okay, well, I have a little bit of insider knowledge here, but The Point's definitely number one.
Yeah.
I would say one of the big reasons that The Point is just because of the location of it. I feel like a lot of people from the Charlotte area and just surrounding areas kind of flock to that one just
that
because one, it's so large and there's a lot more hunt blocks there. That would be one number one.
That was surprising reason. To me too, also from the rendezvous. A lot of people drove over an hour to get there. Mm-hmm. So we held the rendezvous in Troy, close to Troy, at Low Water Bridge, and most folks either drove a ways from Moore County or they drove a ways from Davie and or Rowan County. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting.
But I would say Low Water would be second.
Yep.
And I think primarily the reason between The Point and Low Water is just the ones we talk about the most.
And location and size, I would
yeah.
say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with some of our Sandhills properties, which are the rest of the three, pretty much. But I think Smith Branch is kind of Montgomery-ish.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's probably 10 minutes from Low Water.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it's that close.
Dang.
Don't fact check me, but it's close. It's pretty close.
I mean,
close.
It's just crazy, though, because of how different
they look.
Smith Branch looks from Low Water. I mean, Low Water is predominantly, you know, mature hardwoods, whereas Smith Branch has a lot of early succession and, you know, younger pine stands and has some longleaf on it, too.
It's all long. Not all, but majority is dominated by longleaf.
Crazy.
Yeah. But those were planted.
Right.
Not all of them. Some of them are relic trees, but a lot of them were planted and or are a younger plantation.
Somebody was asking me during the event about some longleaf trees on Low Water.
I don't know.
I didn't have an answer for him. I was like,
what was his question?
He was like, I heard that there were some old longleaf pine trees on low water.
There's white pine.
White pine.
That might be what you're thinking of.
Well, this was his question, not mine.
I know. I'm just saying, but maybe that's what he was thinking of.
Maybe.
Because, you know, white pine are a tree that often do not do well this far into the state. You know, they do better at higher elevations. Mm-hmm. So they're very common. You know, where I grew up in Surrey County, very common. If you go even further west up into the, like, actual big mountains, whatever you want to call them, they're very common there. But they often don't do well here. But Low Water Bridge has a stand of really healthy wildlife. Really healthy.
It's a really healthy stand of wildlife.
Of course it does. Of white pine, which is very unique and, I guess, not unheard of, but just really unique and rare.
It's probably because there's so much elevation down there.
There's a heck of a lot of elevation.
Yeah, we found out about that this past week, didn't we?
Yeah, you didn't believe me. it'll make you sweat.
And down.
That is true.
But I would say the other three after that, Harrington, because it's another really big track, is mm-hmm. number three.
Yeah, perfect.
And then, what was it, Petty, and what was the other one?
I was going to say, your next test is, can you name all five again?
Petty and Smith Branch. I would say Smith Branch over Petty would be next.
Wrong.
Dang, really?
Yeah, which is interesting, but yeah.
And maybe Smith Branch is really pretty, but Petty is just like all. Well, there's some of those really nice river bottoms and all on Petty that I feel like some people would kind of be attracted to for like waterfowl.
Yep, it does offer that. They're very different in vegetation and different size, too, so that could be part of it. And two, I think it's not well known, right? Like, if you go to the point, they're now 10 blocks.
10, yep.
But Smith Branch is one. But to break that all down, of the, let's say, 850 lottery tickets that were placed, 66% of those were on the point, 22% of those were at Low Water Bridge, and then here's where it gets really, really slim. Harrington, only 5%. Petty, let's essentially just say 5%. And then Smith Branch, only 2%.
18 tickets placed out of 868.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Because, so what,
that's probably honestly one of the prettiest tracks, like, for vegetation types.
If I was a wildlife photographer and I wanted to go to any of these properties and have a good opportunity at taking a nice photo of a deer, a turkey, birds, whatever, I'm going to Smith Branch.
I think most of the people that's in this program are not going to be wanting to take pictures of them with a camera, maybe with the animal that they harvest with a camera.
Yeah, that's a picture. That's a picture.
You know what I mean. I'm just saying, in terms of not only pretty aesthetically, what's pleasing to look at with your eyeballs, but which one you would also have a very good opportunity at seeing any of the species that you are interested in hunting in or hunting for.
Just thinking about the habitat types across all these different properties, like anything.
Vegetation types.
Yeah, vegetation types, excuse me. I think that across all of the properties, if you like hunting one certain vegetation type, you can find it in any SAP property. Like if you hunt like hunting cutovers or mature hardwood stands or young forests or, you know, agricultural fields or just agricultural fields that have been left fallow, I think you can find it almost in any one of our properties.
Hey guys, this is Michael with Three Rivers Land Trust. I just want to make a quick note for everyone listening to this podcast. We're currently running a special for all current Sportsman Access program members where you'll have a chance to earn free lottery tickets for upcoming draws. We're calling it the SAP Refer a Friend Special, and from now until March 15th, for every friend you refer to the SAP, you will receive 2 free lottery tickets. That means get 10 of your buddies to join the SAP, and you'll get 20 free tickets. It's a great opportunity to grow our community of hunters and for you to increase your chances on future draws. Just make sure that your friend mentions your name when they create their account and that they sign up for at least the entry-level membership. Now go out and spread the word.
The gunsmithing program at Montgomery Community College is one of only a handful of schools in the United States focusing on this discipline. The curriculum is designed to prepare students for existing jobs within the firearms industry, with training ranging from basic diagnostics and repair to true custom builds. Courses are available for every interest and level of commitment, from a 3-day class to the full 2-year degree program. Gunsmithing is considered one of MCC's heritage crafts programs. Other specialty programs include taxidermy, hunting and shooting sports management, forest management technology, and pottery. Visit montgomery.edu to see course descriptions and explore the exciting world of gunsmithing for yourself. Hey guys, we're going to take a quick break from the show to talk about one of our sponsors, Backcountry and Beyond. You can visit Backcountry and Beyond at 322 South Main Street in Salisbury, North Carolina. They've got a lot of awesome things right now. They've got a new restock of the Meat Church seasonings. They've got their Traeger grills that everybody knows and loves. And if you get your grill from Backcountry and Beyond, they have a free setup, assembly, and delivery to Salisbury, North Carolina, and the surrounding areas. So you can get hooked up with a nice grill and you can get those seasonings while you're there too. Also, they've got that new Nordic collection from Yeti. It's highly sought after and they've got it in stock. So be sure to pop on down there and get all of your outdoor needs. Or if you can't make it down to Salisbury, you can shop online at www.backcountryandbeyond.com.
So you talked about cutovers, and I know this is beside the point, but I like it, and I'm going to talk about it anyway. So we were at low water last week, still in January, and we, long story short, we got a little tied up. We had a lot of things to do, and we didn't get out until after dark. We were making it back to the truck, and the sun had set, and it's not pitch black, but it's pretty darn dark. And what'd we hear out there?
I wish I could do the sound, but
try so it. What?
No.
Just try it. It's easy.
Y'all go ahead, Dan. Go ahead with it.
No. This is perfect.
But we heard several, was it three different ones, I think?
Yeah.
It was two or three different woodcock that were painting. Is that the right word?
That is right, yeah.
To say it right. But they were just calling back and forth to each other. And something I would like for us to try to do, like we were talking about while we were down there, is like, I don't know if you know about it or not, but woodcocks have this mating ritual that they do, which I had never known until I went to NC State, and it was a field trip kind of thing where we went out to. But I'll let you speak on like the type of breeding grounds for why that cutover type habitat is so important.
Yeah, so
them.
So woodcock are a ground bird. They're, I'd say, about the size of a baseball. They have a very, very long beak, and their diet is earthworms, essentially. So what they really like is moist areas that is very, very thick, right? Because they're not like a cardinal that spends most of their time flying. They spend a lot of time on the ground, so they need good cover. So they really, really like early succession that's either going to be dominated by forbs and grasses, and even better is with a thick, woody component. So those cutovers at Low Water Bridge is a great place for them. And right now, and in reality, even later on up into February, is their mating period. So the males have a very elaborate dance called a sky dance, where they go up in the, fly up in the air and kind of dive bomb back down and do these.
They basically just free fall.
Yeah, they do these little spirals, and you can hear their wings. They make a noise called a twittering. Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's pretty good. As they're coming back down, so not only do you hear their peents of them making the vocalization, but when they are doing their sky dance, you can hear the twittering of their wings as they're flying back down. And if you've never seen it, which you can see on some nights and or heard that going on, it's definitely worth, you know.
So, like, they fly up in really, really big circles, and then once they get so high, it almost looks, to me, it looks like somebody got thrown out of an airplane without a parachute.
Yeah.
Like, just free fall, and then before they hit the ground, they start flying again, which is nuts. But anyway, back to the hunting statistics.
Well, here's a hunting statistic. Nobody is really using Low Water Bridge for waterfowl, which is interesting.
That was also something that was very surprising to me, and I don't know if I have that wrote down, but we were looking back through the number of tickets that were placed on each block on each property, and this is not an exaggeration, but nearly every week on every property had an opening. Yep. I don't know if there's a better way to say that, but all of that to say is there's a lot of opportunity out there. And if you were an SAP member that's like, I don't know about this because I'm not a gambler, which, you know, me, I'm very, you know.
I think one thing that I'm not really clear on is how does the leftover blocks work?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that because does that mean when does woodcock season end?
Late February?
Yeah.
I think. I'm not positive.
Don't quote us on that.
Don't quote us. Don't.
We ain't got the rule book out in front of us. So.
But just to say that, because we have leftover blocks, and I know this week there's maybe 8 blocks out of our 20 that are being used, and low water bridge, there's nobody using them. So I'm not sure when this is going to air, but you could, if you're a SAP member, you could go on there and buy that leftover block for $100 and it's yours for that week.
So even if I have 4 draws right now that I've paid $100 for,
yep,
I would have to spend another $100 to get that leftover block.
Yeah. You can't use your existing draws for the leftover blocks. But it's a guarantee on where the draws are. It's a lottery system. So they're sitting there and they're just waiting to get picked up. And
do those leftover blocks get like published anywhere or anything? Or are they on the Rec Access program?
Yeah. So if you're an existing member, you know that we use Rec Access to kind of do our lottery system. And if you go to that main page where you log in, check the upper left and it'll be leftover blocks and they'll have them all listed out in the weeks and which blocks are open. And you can also bring guests. The guests have to pay $100 also, but you can bring up to 2 guests, 3 people hunting a block for a week.
And when do the leftover blocks get posted?
So we post them normally about a couple days after the draw, but we make sure everyone's well aware because it is first come, first serve. So say the draw would happen on a Tuesday, probably by Thursday we'll have those leftover blocks. And we'll put them there at the same time, and everyone will be aware, so there's a fair chance for everybody to get a chance at it.
Why are there leftover blocks? Is that just because nobody put a lottery ticket in on that
correct
block?
Yeah, which is, like Katie was saying, the kind of surprising thing. There's blocks at the point, opening of muzzleloader, I believe, that went to leftover blocks. Nobody put a draw on it, so.
And your woodcock season ends January 31st. Snipe, end of February, February 28th, so. There's still opportunity.
Yeah, there's still time.
Still opportunity.
And you got a hot tip. There's some woodies at Low Water Bridge.
Woodcock, not woodies.
Nobody calls them woodies?
No, that's a wood duck. Don't do that.
You
scratch that.
Yeah.
I don't hunt waterfowl.
So y'all said there's opportunity to hunt waterfowl on low water. Where would you hunt waterfowl if you were a serious waterfowl hunter on low water?
So I don't think I said that. Maybe I did.
You did.
I said woodcock, maybe. Mm-hmm.
I think it might have been Michael said.
Petty.
Throwing me under the bridge.
Petty. Throwing you under low water bridge.
I was just asking because I did not see anything suitable to really draw me to waterfowl hunt at low water.
I would not waterfowl hunt at low water bridge.
Okay.
The river does run through there, which wood duck could be using. And there, you know, essentially the Uari River touches every single block. So that could be an opportunity. But if I was truly wood duck hunting, low water would not be on my list.
Okay.
I would go the point, and there are several blocks there, as well as some of the Sandhill properties like Petty and Harrington.
Just wanted to clear that up so nobody's putting in a bunch of draws for waterfowl and low water.
Yeah, you said it. Yeah.
We'll go with that.
I think y'all are lying to me.
All right.
What else?
What's next on our statistics?
The most used blocks or the blocks with the most lottery tickets on them at each property.
So which block do you think's most hunted at the point?
Block 4 all day.
So Katie cheated.
I did not cheat.
Because that's what she is. She's a big old cheater.
That is not true.
So block 4, why do we think block 4 is most sought after at the point? Like
Michael had an answer, but I disagree with his answer.
Yeah, maybe it's just because why I think I like it. It's just the closest to parking.
How
it's
is
convenient.
That the closest to parking?
See that?
You can.
So we got a map right now. See that P? You park there, and you're on the block.
So talking about block 4, what vegetation types is block 4?
But hang on, I'm still hung up on Michael's answer because I don't understand. You can park at the same parking area and you were literally touching block 5 and block 3.
Well, I guess here's the other point. You see that big field right by the river, that probably draws people in.
Okay. Well, that's a better answer.
Yeah, I just changed my answer. But there's also I think parking helps.
A big field right there on block three, too.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Not where we have our annual dove hunt that's coming up this year.
That is a great point. I would say, is that the second most sought-after block at the point, block three? That would be my guess.
It is.
That is correct.
Ooh,
so see, what it sounds like the trend
access
is...
Access and fields.
People like hunting vast open areas.
Mm-hmm. Or access.
But it was soybeans this year, wasn't it? So it could have been really drawn sought after because of the soybean crop that was there.
I think another reason block four has so many tickets, I will agree, I will not say it's the easiest block, but it is easy access because there is a road going all the way down to the bottom of block four. But you have a very large agriculture field. You have a thinned pine stand. You have what we affectionately call the peanut field, which may be a food plot on year to year, and or it's just early succession. So, and it's also smack dab in the middle of a big field and a pine stand and hardwood, right? So there's a lot of things coming together right there at the peanut field, which could all come together really well for a hunter, regardless of whether it's deer or turkey. And then you have the waterfowl impoundment and the natural swamp there. So there's a lot of things going on block four that could offer a lot of opportunity regardless.
Maybe I'm not giving our members enough credit. I just see easy parking, big field.
Done.
And by that, Michael's saying he's just lazy, you know, like to walk a lot.
And I will say all of these on the Davie County side is a little easier to get to than blocks 1, 2, and 7 on the Rowan side. So that's, I think that's another draw. Maybe draw is not the best word, but another draw for folks to go to this side of the point, just because you can drive to the red gate, park behind a locked red gate, and you are right there. You're not having to drive down a road that's not the best.
See, you're agreeing with me now.
Which blocks on here are on the other side of the river?
One, two, and seven.
So why do you think those have lower numbers than what we call point proper that's off of Point Road?
I just said that.
I missed it. I'm sorry. I won't make you reiterate it, but which block was hunted the least on the point, do you think?
So I just saw it, so I can't answer that. But that,
I was going to act like I knew the answer even though I'm staring at it.
I would say those blow my mind.
So go ahead and say which one it is.
Block 9 was the least sought after block at the point, with only 3% of the lottery draws.
Do you think that's because...
Even a little crazier, it's actually the least popular block in the entire SAP.
And really? Block 9...
Yeah, I mean, when you get with Harrington and Petty...
Isn't that the new Davis piece?
Mm-mm. That's the what we call the Steinman piece.
Oh, it is.
And my assumption for the reason that is the least sought after block, not saying these are valid reasons, but I think it is a smaller block.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of fields on them, and if you look at a map, you're like, oh, these are some bang up agriculture fields, but they're not. Right now, they are in kudzu that we are working very hard to get rid of. But I think because one, it's a smaller block, it's a new block. Like, this is the first year that somebody's been able to hunt it, so I think some folks might not be familiar with it.
That's what I would think. Like, I've had success on these other blocks, I'm gonna stick to what I know.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of deal would be my thing.
Yep. But in that on that same token, block 8 is also a new block, but it had 11% of the lottery draws. Still nowhere near as high as block 4 at 24%. But
it has that agricultural field on it. So I think the agricultural fields are the key to a lot of this.
I think it's diversity. Because block 8, you have that ag field that everybody's drawn to, right? Like, if you ever drive down Point Road, like, somebody's always rubbernecking at that field. People love that field for
man,
what?
That looks good.
I think it's
Giddy Mare.
I think it's because you can see, it's like a long, narrow field downhill. So you can see essentially from the top to the bottom. So you got it covered. You know what I mean? And I think it's a.
Do these statistics include last year's spring draw?
Mm-hmm. No, this is just this winter.
Oh, so okay.
So all this could change, right? This is deer season, small game.
I'd be interested to compare fall draws to.
I've looked at it. It's pretty similar.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Especially at the point. Interesting. 5, 6, and 3. So if you're listening, don't put any picks on block 5. That's where I like to go.
So let's transition to low water. What's the most hunted block at low water?
Who's this question for?
Either one of you.
I think I do remember it, so I won't say it.
All right.
I think it's three.
Never mind.
Is what do three? You think it is? If you had to guess.
Least hunted.
No, most hunted.
Most hunted. Most hunted. I feel like I have some residual knowledge of it being three or five, and I would go three because access from the map appears the easiest.
Is it three?
No.
Really? Ooh. Wow, I put these together and I don't remember.
Most hunted block at the point was block one.
At the point or low water? What are you talking about?
Low water, I mean. I'm sorry.
Now, you got to remember, that's the most tickets placed. So the most tickets were placed on block one.
So the most tickets placed, the most sought after block at low water bridge was block one.
Am I on there?
Yeah.
The reason,
am I explaining right?
The reason Michael and I are looking at each other like that is because we know
of someone who places a lot of tickets there.
From insider knowledge of an individual who will go unnamed, who spent a whole heck of a lot of money because block one is very important to this individual.
Yes.
So I think that would equate to skewed results.
Yeah, a lot of tickets.
Just looking at it, though, block one, out of all the blocks, probably has the most, just looking at it, you know, it looks like it has a lot of road frontage that has, you know, I mean, it has more trails on it from this map that we're looking at it.
Which is not true, and we are working to rectify.
We're working to get a lot of that low water access better cleaned up. But I can't remember all the block numbers down there, but what's the vegetation type of block one?
So block one has one cutover in it, which is a prime spot for those woodcock that we were just talking about. That is not where we were listening to the woodcock, but I bet if we'd have been there listening, they would have been there as well. But most of block one experienced a prescribed fire three years ago now, and it burned pretty hot. So right now it has a lot of dead trees on it, mm-hmm. and it's mature hardwoods. So there's a lot of really, really, really nice oak trees in there, white oaks, red oaks. But the interesting thing about it is because it burned, and because it was burned on a quote, not severe day, and or the intensity was a little higher. There are so many dead trees that it is now getting a response of a lot of regenerating trees come back. A lot of the overstory has died, so there may be some standing dead snags, but there's some really good cover in there for wildlife and or a hunter, you know, whatever lens you're looking at it from. But whereas if you go on blocks, certain parts of block five or certain parts of block three, you can climb up in a climber stand and see a long ways. That might not be the case, or not so much of the case, on block one, just because there's some areas in there that's really thick and a lot of down trees, a lot of re-sprouting hardwoods.
I think a big thing to look at when it comes to low water is the terrain. What's the terrain like in block one?
There's
up and down, kind of moderate.
I would rank that one as moderate. It's not as up and down as some other blocks are.
So that could be a big thing. It's easier walking.
Which is why I said individual.
Yeah, I might play into it.
Yeah.
So what's the least one hunted at low water?
Block three.
So the least one hunted at low water is block three, now that our cheaters are back on
the
scale.
If the page is open,
I'm even sitting in front of it.
So what's block three? Why do we think that one's the least hunted? Or at least lottery picks were placed on that one.
So I would not have guessed that was the least hunted, because if you compare blocks three and five, three essentially has a whole heck of a lot of road frontage, right? So you could park at three or four different spots along block three and access and traverse to different parts. But maybe it's because it's smaller. I don't know. I don't know why.
Okay. Moving on, talking about our Sandhills properties.
Can I look, or am I not allowed to flip the page?
No, cheater, give me that paper.
We get
here.
A 50-50 with these.
Yeah, if you can't answer a true or false question, you need to go on.
Those are always the ones I struggle with the most.
So, the Harrington property, which one gets hunted more, block one or block two?
Block one.
if this was me choosing of what I would rather hunt, I would go block two all day.
So block two is hunted more, or more lottery tickets are placed on it. And only 46 were placed in total this year. But it's almost about a 50-50. I mean, 56.5 for block two, 43.5 for one. Pretty even there. And then petty, what y'all hunt? Block one or block two?
Depends on what I'm hunting for.
Deer season. That's the biggest hunting season during this time that most people put in for.
If I'm deer hunting, I would go block one.
I'll just be different and say block two.
Okay, well, block one is more, man, has more tickets placed. But still there again, only 42 tickets placed on that entire property. And it's, I mean, it's, well, how many acres is it? Close to 300 or so?
It's written on your sheet. But something different about that property is also that block two is a new block also, right? Like within the last year, we've just added petty block two. That's where you spend a lot of time mowing trails out for the hunters. And I think a lot of hunters really, really appreciated that, because before that it was thick as whiz and you were fighting through blackberry bushes. So
never heard that saying
before. So why would you hunt block one over block two?
I like the diversity that's there. You have some,
which is,
you have a thinned pine woodland. When you first pull into block one, you're going to be looking at an area that was thin to a low basal area that has some really good cover there. You have some other areas that are unthinned pines, and then you have a lot of hardwoods in there too.
I know those hardwood bottom lands down in there are really, really pretty.
That old swamp land.
You know, and I really wonder with all this rain we've had, how much water, how high the water has come up through there.
I've seen the water myself. I'm sure it gets up higher than this, but I've seen the water up to the fire break on Petty One. And you know how high that is and how far of a distance that is from the river to that thin pine savanna. So,
and there's so many sloughs and everything in there that when it does flood like that, I bet you a lot of those will stay flooded probably till it dries up.
Oh, yeah, they do. You can look on aerial imagery and see that.
Oh, yeah. All right. Deer harvest numbers. In total, how many deer y'all think was harvested on all of our properties this year? Michael, you don't get to answer because you might know the answer. Katie?
I don't know.
You should know too, but just give me two numbers.
Two numbers? What do you mean?
One from each of y'all.
Okay. See, I gotta do some thinking first.
All right, well, Michael, just
I'll just
me
throw
another.
Another. I want to say 22.
Whoa! Oh my gosh! I would not have said that many.
Really? I think that's gotta be pretty close. I don't have the full number on this, and you have to do the math.
So I would say, from my knowledge, again, I don't always see the harvests that are going on, but what I do see oftentimes is the amount of pressure, and it blows my mind if I am out at a property how few people that are there. Like, for example, there will be somebody that has that block, but they may only show up to hunt on a Saturday, right? So and it can be tough to hunt a property like that if you've never seen it. So all of that to say, I think our harvest would be much lower. I would go 14
for all of our properties. So at the point, there was 8 bucks harvested across the entire point, and there was only 1 doe harvested. I'm going to need you fellas and ladies to shoot some more does.
I second that. I strongly second
From
that.
From a manager perspective, explain why, Katie.
Because buck and doe ratios are very important. You want that age structure to be as close to 1-to-1 as possible. And if you are only killing bucks, not only are you not allowing those to grow, but you are also skewing that sex ratio to be further away from 1-to-1.
And then on low water, we had 3 bucks harvested and 2 does harvested. So we got 3-to-2.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good job, low. And also, so hang on. A reason for that may be, I'm not going to say maybe, the reason for that is because there are antler restrictions on low water bridge, whereas on the point, there are not antler restrictions. Mm. So to harvest a deer at low water bridge, it has to have a certain number of points and or be outside of the ears. That is not the case on the point.
So what is the ideal ratio of harvests, like buck to doe harvest ratio?
It depends on what you start with.
Okay, well, not knowing what you start with, just
Well, then you can't adequately
okay,
say
we'll
that.
We'll let it go then. Katie's got to be so systematic, and everything's just got to be, you know everything, and
no, that's
we
not
have
what I'm
to
saying.
Make the best. Just we'll leave it at that. But anyway, so the petty, there was 2 bucks harvested and 2 does harvested.
Good job, petty hunters.
Yeah. And then Harrington, there was only 3 bucks harvested.
Oh, it's 21.
Hmm.
I was one off.
See, Michael, yeah. He's in tune with his job.
To be fair,
that's crazy.
I was gonna hang on. To be fair, he won this competition because people literally report harvest directly to him.
This
so.
Is true.
But you enter them on a spreadsheet, so you're just
no, I don't.
Oh, I thought you.
Nah,
were
I put them on the spreadsheet.
I don't see that. I do
and
not
then put that data together.
Exactly.
Point, so I should have
but
actually
anyway,
got it exactly.
It's not a competition. Just make yeah, it.
But if it was, I won.
Only because you
so
definitely
what
cheated.
Are we going to call you the statistics champion
yeah.
now, too?
Like I said, I like to collect trophies.
And by that, he means he likes to brag, and we have to listen
little
to
bit.
It all the time.
A little
but,
bit.
But that's crazy, though. 21 deer out of 7,000 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yep.
No, well, we got the lease property.
Yeah, not 7,000.
How many acres would you say is in SAP altogether?
46.
3,500.
35.
I mean, 21 deer on, say, 4,000 acres. That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, I just feel like that's very minuscule.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would like to know, is that because hunters just don't want to shoot deer because it's going to be a pain to get the deer out of the woods?
I think
or
that's a
is
lot
it because
it.
They're trophy hunting or... I mean, because me, I eat a lot of deer meat, so usually if it's, round, we're going to be shooting something if it's not a baby,
Why? What's the difference there?
Because...
See?
There's some ethics
they're
involved
cute.
Where... Hey, I've shot deer with spots, so...
Oh, wow.
I mean, I was a youngin' when I did it, but I ain't
so
got nothing
the deer.
Against it. That's veal. But I don't know. It just really intrigues me that... I figured it'd be like at least in the 50s.
Really?
Like as many, how many different hunters would you say is on our properties every year?
Well, for this, there were 290 places taken. Now that's multiple people. I'd say 150 for deer season.
So 150 people and only 21 of those people. And those could be repetitive people that were successful.
Or that could be, just because there were 290 lottery tickets placed or whatever it was.
290 that won, yep.
That is not saying that that's 290 different people. For example, if one person put in a whole lot of draws and that one person won, that's...
Yeah, and they could have won five different weeks.
Sure.
Okay, well, we'll say 100, what do you say, 150?
150, that could
so
be way off.
So 150 different week opportunities, is that right? Saying that? Like, there was 150, I don't know where I'm
say
going.
Say there's 150 people.
I feel like there's a lot of people hunting. And
yeah, we currently have 230 members.
I would like to know how
members,
much opportunity all of these individuals
but we
had.
started doing a survey, and again, I don't see the answers.
Which we encourage you to fill out, because that's how we get this data.
Michael started doing a survey to ask hunters their observations while in the field, as well as asking them the hours spent in the field, the days spent in the field, what their target species was, to get a little bit more of this information. And I don't know if you want to hit on that or not, but...
Yeah, I think just in short, it's the reasoning is what we think it is, because... The observation survey, they were seeing a lot of doe.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Like a lot. Over 100. I can't remember the exact number, but.
Shoot.
Yeah. So I think they're just passing on the does, which, it's their choice to do so, but I think if everybody would have wanted to just fill their tags, the harvest number would have been way higher. But I think there's a lot of trophy hunters or.
I don't
some
like the word
don't.
Trophy hunter. I don't like that word.
Big buck hunters.
There, that's better.
Because every deer is a trophy. I
big
agree.
Rack bucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, on the survey, one person's target species was Buckzilla, so.
All right.
Yeah.
So we'll just kind of get into wrapping this up. What's some of our main takeaways from this episode about the SAP rendezvous and SAP program?
I would say, and we can go around whatever, I would say my takeaway is we love y'all. We're listening to you. We're doing this for you. So, if there's something you do like, don't like, If you're somebody that's considering it, being a member, but there's a reason you're not, hey, well, I mean, we're just people. You know, shoot us an email, call us, text us, whatever. We want to make it something that you enjoy. And come to our rendezvous, because I had a great time, and I think the fellas around the table did, and folks that showed up also had a great time. So,
I'll second that one.
Yeah, it was a blast. I guess just in short, it's a great program, and I'm not saying that biasly because I'm on the staff with TRLT because I was a member before joining them. So if you're looking for a different kind of hunting opportunity, it's hard to beat this. We've gone through some of the statistics. Don't let the lottery system scare you. Use the info that we provided today. You got a good chance of hunting. You don't have to think like, oh, I'm just throwing $100 away either if you don't get drawn, because $100 goes to TRLT and all of our efforts to, you know, conserve and manage the land. So it's not, don't think you're throwing your money away just because you don't get drawn.
If you're putting in an extra $100, know that goes to diesel in the tractor tank to help bush hog you a lane to get
exactly.
out there to access.
Yeah, which I hope all of y'all enjoyed, because I got a lot of limbs to the face this year. But
builds character.
If you say so, I'll put you out there, brother. But I would say one of my main takeaways from this, and this could just be because of where you're located and where you're hunting, but I would say one thing to me is don't be afraid to diversify and go hunt new places, because it seems like there's a lot of great opportunities in some of these other blocks that, you know, you may be putting in for the point all the time, and if you keep not getting drawn, you know, just change it up a little bit and throw some somewhere else. You may have to drive a little bit farther, and I understand gas is high, but depends on how much you want to go hunting if you're not having any luck at the point. I would say, you know, the rendezvous was a big thing. And then another big takeaway for me is, you know, this data is really, really important and allows us to give you better information about where you can better spend your lottery tickets and hopefully get you in the woods more so that, you know, everybody has the same opportunity. So please fill out your surveys at the end of every year and stay in contact with us.
And last takeaway, if you are good at cornhole, please show up to the next rendezvous so that way we can just put Michael to
just
shame.
So we can shut him up.
Right, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Bring it on.
All right. Until next time, y'all take it easy.
If you like the show and would like the episodes to keep coming, you should know that our podcast is just one of the tools that we use at Three Rivers Land Trust to further our conservation mission. Our number one priority and purpose is to conserve land and natural resources for future generations and to be a voice for wildlife and to ensure wildlife populations have habitat forever here in North Carolina. This podcast is just a byproduct to further that mission. You can visit our website at trlt.org to join us in this conservation mission.